This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the More Than Just Code podcast, episode 399. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Tammy Coron in East Tennessee.
Hey, Tim. Hey, everybody. How y'all doing?
She said y'all.
I just realized that I won't be able to get the response back from anyone who's listening, but I can get a response from you. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, I'm actually kind of tired, but that's another story. So just before we started recording, Tammy was telling me that she used to be in West Tennessee, but now she's in East Tennessee.
Yes, I moved from the flatlands to the mountains, and I really like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, a lot. It's funny because I always knew I wanted to be in East Tennessee. I mean, from the time I was little, right? I love Dolly Parton. I love the mountains. I love the whole thing. And
yeah, but you're from New Jersey, though.
I am from New Jersey, but I moved to Tennessee, West Tennessee, in 2012, and then moved to East Tennessee probably like 2.5-3 years ago. So maybe 2 years ago. I don't know. It's math. It's numbers. I don't do so well with that.
No, you don't. And for those of you who are new to the show, Tammy and I used to do a podcast called Roundabout Creative Chaos together. And Tammy has been a guest host on More Than Just Code on more than one occasion, and she occasionally pollutes our Spotcast Spocky Awards with some of her
everything I touch, I pollute. It's all right.
But we like, you know, there was some of the answers on the way the Spockies work is we give you a choice of like 5 to 10 movies, and we get these comments every now and these write-in comments that like, you guys are making these names up. And I've never heard of any of these people, and so we always assume that's got to be Tammy's vote. So
it usually is, because I don't know any of the names on there. Although I'll tell you, I think the last one you had on there was Pluribus, right? Wasn't that one of the options?
Yes, it was. Yes.
And I did watch it, and I did enjoy it, but I'm not recommending it to anybody because I found out that season 2 is probably not going to show up till like late 2027 or some such thing, and that's just too long.
That's the thing, like, we talk about that on Spotcast, too, is that the only show that comes out every year on time is Slow Horses, right? Everything else is, like, you know, 18 months or more between episode or between seasons. It's crazy.
I can't even remember what happened 18 minutes ago. I can't definitely remember what happened 18
well,
months ago.
Well, that's true. I can attest to that, that Tammy has that kind of memory.
I do. But Pluribus was good.
So I do have some fact check that I got to go through from the last episode where Jaime and I went through the stuff that was announced at the last event. I don't know if you followed any of that stuff, Tammy, but there was we were wondering about, we kind of do these shows kind of live, so there's a few details we kind of missed between Jaime and myself. So we were talking about the iPad M4, the new iPad M4 from 2026. It has 12 gigabytes of unified memory. We weren't sure how much memory was dedicated to the device itself. The iPad Pro M4, for example, has 8 gigabytes, and the iPad Pro M5 2026 has 12 gigabytes of unified memory. So the M4 iPad is got as much unified memory. And just for completion, the iPad Pro M5 1 terabyte and the 2 terabytes both have 16 gigabytes of unified memory to use. So that's kind of cool. And then the this must be a typo. The base iPad 2025 has 8 gigabytes of RAM, unified RAM. And my reason I'm laughing at the typo is I've got 86 gigabytes. It certainly doesn't have 86 gigabytes of unified memory.
Strange number.
Price of $399 or whatever it is US. We were also talking about iCloud Plus and what we were getting confused about. I'm sure you guys were shaking your fists at the phones. There is still a free iCloud, which is the 5 gigabyte option, which you get with any device you buy from Apple. The paid version is iCloud Plus, starting at $99 for 50 gigabytes, 200 gigabytes for $299, and 2 terabytes for $999. Those prices are all US dollars. I did have a couple of other things I just want to talk about. We were talking about we also messed up the new studio displays, the studio display and the studio display XDR. The pricing, we got those mixed up. I kind of patch together a live a fact check. But I also found that after I did the show, there are a couple of other displays on the market. There's the Qui-Con G32P, which is a 6K display, similar to the Studio Display XDR, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. The same company also has the G27, which is 5K, which is like the Studio Display now, because the new, I don't know if you saw the new displays, Tammy, they're both 5K, not 6K anymore. And then there's a P32, which is 4K, and a P27, which is 4K. So if you want a 27-inch monitor, you don't want to go all that big size. Comparably, also, LG has an ultra-fine EVO 6K, which also has Thunderbolt 5, and that's around $2,000 US, which is a good price. And then the Asus ProArt 6K is $1,300 US. And we completely missed... Anyway, so I'll have a link in show notes to that Qui-Con monitor. And then we completely missed the introduction of the brand new MacBook Air M5. Duh. So I'll just have a link in the show notes to that one, so we don't need to cover it today. But so what we're here for today is to talk to Tammy Coron about herself as a developer and, you know, pusher of one bits and ones and zeros and stuff like that, and a new product that she's got. Well, we'll talk about in a little bit later. But yeah, so any thoughts on the follow-up and the fact check before we move on, Tammy?
Apple's been doing a lot lately. I haven't really been following much, if I'm going to be honest with you.
I guess my pick for today is David Pogue's new book. I've been going through that one on audiobook. He's done the first 50 years, because next episode we're going to cover the 50th anniversary of the Apple. Of Apple, the company. But, so I'm learning all kinds of stuff about Apple. It's funny, I'd forgotten, like, all this kind of history I went through with Apple, and you did too, but I completely forgot about, like, a good chunk of it, which is really, really weird, you know?
I remember when I first got into doing Apple development, but even before then, I used to be a Windows girl, like, 100%, you know? And I was programming at the time for just a bunch of different stuff, but mostly it was in, you know, .NET or C# or whatever, you know, whatever the program was calling for at the time. And I didn't touch Mac much. And anytime anyone ever needed any help, it was usually with their Windows PC. And I'm talking, you know, long, long time ago. And one time, I guess it was my nephew or something, it was my cousin, and he needed help with his Apple machine. I'm like, what? I've never touched one at the time, you know? And I was really confused by it, because there wasn't much to it. And I was like, who wants to use this? I'm never using this. You know, and then fast forward maybe like 10 years later or whatever, and, you know, I'm full in on development and doing everything on Windows. And my husband says, you know, because he had been using Mac for probably about a year before that. And he's like, you should really get a Mac. I said, I can't do that. I'm a Windows developer. What am I going to do with a Mac? And he talked me into it. And it didn't take long. I ended up putting Windows on my Mac. I did a dual boot at first. And it was funny because it ran Windows better than any Windows machine I had ever had.
Yeah, I used to say that to people all the time, is that Apple made the best Windows PCs.
They really did. But I'll tell you, it didn't last long. When I wasn't doing the work, the development work for whoever I was working for at that time, I would boot right into the Mac OS, and it was just so much better. It didn't take long, because I had let down my guard. I wasn't so defensive about it, you know? And I was like, all right, well, I think I like this. And gosh, that's got to be every bit of 20, 25 years ago at this point. I've been Mac. Now, of course, I'm on a Windows machine right now, but that's because the software that I've been working on, it's a, what do you call it? What's that word? Can't even think of it now. Cross-platform.
Multi-platform,
cross-platform. So occasionally I got to come over here under the Windows box, but I also play a lot of video games, mostly World of Warcraft. So I needed a good mic to do that because I play with some folks. So the good mic that I have is on my Windows machine, so that's why I'm here on the Windows machine. But I
you find, like, when you're doing World of Warcraft, for example, that it runs better on PCs? I mean, how do you find, like, playing games on, because I know you're a big gamer, right? What do you prefer for platform?
Windows? I prefer Windows for gaming for a couple reasons. I mean, Mac is catching up, but a lot of games just they are more performant on Windows. They're more available on Windows, which is the big one. But that is changing. You know, Apple has. And I should tell you up front, you know, one of the reasons I sort of stepped away from Apple development is because I got more into game development, more into 3D game development specifically. And I'm a sprite kit girl all the way. And if it's an Apple 2D game, fine, use sprite kit. They got a lot of stuff out there for you. But I had made the jump to 3D and SceneKit just wasn't doing it for me. So I looked into Unity and I looked into Unreal, and it was just better for me. And all of that development I ended up doing not on my Mac, but on my Windows machine, just because it, especially with Unity, you know, being C#, it just felt like the right place for me to be, you know. And I didn't feel like making the game work on Mac. Like, it worked. I've done a couple of them, and they worked. But it just didn't feel right. I felt out of place.
So when you say, like, a 3D game, are you talking, like, a sort of a Zelda thing where you've got, like, this big giant world you can run around wherever you want? Or what do you mean by 3D, like, when you say that? Because it's a broad subject.
It is, right? A very broad subject. I'm not into FPS-type games. I like the old point-and-click.
When you do the three-letter acronyms, can you sort of explain it to the people like me who don't play games?
First-person shooter.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I should have known that one.
You should have known that one. I'll let it slide, though. No, yeah.
They're everywhere.
They are everywhere. And so the gaming industry is saturated just across the board. It has been for a long time. And when I sign on to do any kind of project, whether it be a paid project for a client or a passion project for myself, which those are the ones I like more, I know that especially in gaming, you're not going to make this huge splash. I mean, and you have to get noticed, and it's very difficult to get noticed in today's environment. Of course, there's reasons why it's even more difficult today. But for the 3D game stuff in general, I had this idea based on a story that I had written in a card game that I had created about that story. And I wanted to take it from just a regular point-and-click 2D adventure game, which I had built in SpriteKit, and I wanted to port it over to a 3D game. So it's basically a 3D game where you're walking around and it's point and click and you're solving puzzles. It's nothing. I mean, it's, you know, they're a dime a dozen. I hate to say it, but they are. Mine was no different, you know. But it was just a fun project to do. I never released it. I did what I always do, or seem to do a lot, and I started building the game for me to have the experience of just taking something that I thought about and making it real. But as I was developing, I was like, oh, this is really cool. I bet you other people could use some of this stuff here. So then I started to write it as more of an engine, which is exactly what I did with the 2D point-and-click sprite kit game engine I made. Again, I was just making a game, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. I bet you other people, you know, could find use for this. And then I started making not a game for myself, but a tool that other people could use. And that's what happens with me. I have this idea because I want to do something. I need something. I start to do it for myself. And then I'm like, you know, I need to share this with other people. And then it becomes a bigger project than I ever anticipated. And it always goes back to some type of tool or resource for other people.
Well, let's go back. We were talking initially about your sort of earlier days and, you know, first getting into Apple and stuff like that. But what's your sort of, I mean, I know you and your mother ran a business, bulletin board business, but what's your sort of history of when did you first start looking at computers? When did you start working on them? Can we go back that far?
We can go back that far, and it's pretty far. So I'm in my 50s now. I'm 52. And I only know that because it just happened a couple months ago. And I did the math, and that's what they told me. So, but I started working with computers as a kid. I mean, I was like 5 years old on a TRS-80, and I was playing Lunar Lander was my favorite game at the time. I absolutely loved it. And I wanted to learn how to make stuff like that. You know, I was playing word games as well on the TRS-80.
So is the Lunar Lander like the game where did you actually have like a little outlam that you could watch come down on the screen, or was it all by numbers where you sort of
there's two
and
I've played both of them and they're both equally fun, but the one that I really enjoyed was the one that had the graphics with it where you had your little guy and you'd hit the space bar and you know you'd have to like land your little tiny ship in these weird places and not crash it. I always crash it
like on the flat part, like it'd be sort of like a mountain scape.
You'd have to pick up fuel and things like that, and it was a lot of fun, and the word games were a lot of fun. And I had asked my my grandfather, I'm like, you know, how does this stuff work, like how can I do this? So he showed me how to program in BASIC, which was kind of interesting. And I had a lot of spelling errors, but I was making games and they were fun. And it was for me, the entire process of learning at that age how to do this stuff that I'm still doing today. It's the same feeling. And that's why it's not the end result. It's not the product. It's not the game. It's not anything that I make at the end. It's the process of making it. It's the process of learning how to make it. Learning is the big thing, right? I love learning. If I could have a job for the rest of my life to just learn how to do things, that would be the best job ever.
Yeah, it's true. It's funny. I've been thinking about it a lot lately too, because you know, with the advent of all these LLMs and coding assistants and agents and things like that, I mean, I've become way more productive in terms of getting apps out the door since I started using LLMs to help me. Because I get stuck in the sort of like, you know, the having to type out all this stuff. I'm not a touch typer, so you know, I like to put together solutions and ideas and make things that, you know, I could use and I think other people could use too, right? But I kind of wonder, and we're rethinking what my role is as a developer. Like, I don't want to spend all day writing code. I think I talked to somebody about this a couple of weeks ago. He was like, why did you use an LLM? Why didn't you just write the code? Because I'm not by nature a coder. So I'd rather, you know, come up with the idea, make the solution, and then put the pieces together like Lego, like I always say it is with iOS and development, right? But yeah, I mean, so how do you see yourself as a, because I know you kind of alluded to this earlier, but like about a year and a half ago, you had said, I'm retiring, you're not doing this anymore, and here we are talking about a product you just created, right? So,
well, see, that's what happens, right? So I retired 2 years ago. I was really heavily enmeshed in tech publishing, you know, whether it be managing authors or managing editors or being an author or editor myself.
Yeah, you're herding cats, right?
That's what it felt like sometimes, yeah. And I loved it, you know. I had been in tech publishing since like 2012 or some such thing like that. And it was fun, but it was time to leave. And, you know, I guess maybe somewhere in my head, I kind of saw the writing on the wall that the publishing space in general was changing, and specifically tech publishing. But that wasn't the only reason. You know, it's getting more difficult for me to read and sustain that reading and see the words and have the cognitive capabilities to just pull things apart for, you know, 12 hours a day. It was just too much. Now, I still enjoy reading. I still work with authors. I still work with editors. I still play with words, but it's not what I do all the time. And so I retired, and I enjoyed it for the first few months. I still enjoy it. But I started to think, you know, like you just asked me, well, where do you see yourself? I don't know. I bounce between things. And somewhere within the last couple of years, when I was retired, I had more time to myself. And I went back to my roots, and those roots would be fiction. So I started writing a fiction story. And that's a whole other conversation about how that happened. But I started writing this fiction story, and I turned it into a small little podcast. And then, you know, I didn't have time to keep that up. So it's like, you know what, let me just make this book. I'll just write this book. I'll get it out there. I don't have to worry about the tech stuff. It's fiction. It's not going to go anywhere. So I started looking around to, you know, what apps could I use to produce this book after I've written it. I already had three stories written. I've got the fourth one drafted out. I need to figure out how to produce this book. And when I started looking around, I realized that there wasn't anything that would work for me in the way that I wanted it to work. There's a lot of nice product out there, but it wasn't what I wanted. So I put my developer hat back on, quite literally, and I built the tool that I needed to make my books.
So when you say to produce the book, you're talking about creating print-ready PDFs, or just in terms of like assembling the books for e-publishing and that kind of stuff? Like,
for both. So with this one that I built for myself, you can create PDFs, either single page PDFs, you know, it's all one page, or you can do facing pages, which you would use for something like print on demand, or you could take it to a printer. But those would be your facing pages. It also creates accessible EPUBs, which is real big for me, just accessibility in general, because as I said, the older I get, the harder it is for me to see, the more difficult it is for me to have sustained reading. So audiobook narration is good for me. Any type of accessibility. I mean, I've been on the hunt to find something that sounds good when you read it that's not audible, and I still haven't found anything yet. But accessibility was big to me. So every tool that I looked at put accessibility last, as like an afterthought. So when I built this tool, I was like, well, it's got to be accessible because I need to use it for myself. And if, you know, at the time when I was writing it, I was like, nobody's going to use this but me. But that didn't last long because I told a couple friends about it and they're like, oh, I'd like that too. You planning on distributing it? And I wasn't. But there's been a lot of interest, so now I am distributing it. And
so why don't we put a name to the product? So people.
So the name of the product is, yeah, it's Mockingbird. I shut down my old business. I used to have a business, Just Write Code, and that's where I produced all my games, all my other stuff. But I had closed that down when I retired. So in January, I spun up a new business. And the name of that business is Wicked Lantern Studio. So you can go to wickedlanternstudio.com and read all about Mockingbird. Right now I've got Mockingbird PDFX out there, which is a standalone free app that you can download. Go get it today. It will take your regular PDFs, which could be print ready or not, and it'll turn them into PDFX, which does a lot of extra stuff that you need if you're looking to do any type of serious printing. A lot of places,
yeah,
like,
is it ink on paper we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like KDP, Lulu, all these ones out there that are looking for PDFs, they want PDFX format. So this tool will take your PDF, let's say you export it out of, I don't know, Scrivener or something, and you could take it and put it into this app and turn it into PDFX, and it'll spit it out, it'll embed the fonts, it'll put in your color profiles if you have an ICC that you want to attach to it, which is just a color profile, you can attach one and it'll just build the PDF for you. But that wasn't enough, so I created Mockingbird Press, which takes, you can write your books in Markdown, which is what I use to write my books. I have used that for a very, very long time. Or if you like Google Docs, you can use that. If you like Microsoft Word, you can use that. Whatever you're comfortable writing in. You can either write directly in Mockingbird Press with the editor, which I'm working on a standalone editor, which will also be free. So you'll have PDFX is free, you'll have the editors free. But right now, Press is got its own editor built in, which is a Markdown editor. And again, we can have conversations about the best Markdown editor out there. And if you talk to 20 different people, you'll have 30 different answers, right? Because everybody has their favorite Markdown editor. And there's a lot of good ones out there, but there was some specific things that I wanted to write my books that just didn't exist, you know? So I created this editor so that I, with a click of a button, I can do certain things. And then you can just assemble your book, and it comes with a bunch of templates that I'm still working on the templates in terms of what they look like. I've got some sample books in there that I'm still working on. But you can choose your templates, you can choose your fonts, you can choose your sizes, your colors, and you can, with one set of documents, you hit a button to build it, and you can build, like I said, a PDF, facing pages, straight pages, EPUB. You can even do a multi-markdown. It'll assemble it all into one markdown file if you need to put it somewhere else. And it just does everything I needed it to do for my books. You know, and I did it for myself, and I like it. But
well, that's what we call dog fooding, right? When you make your own, you're the primary user of your own app, right? So
yeah, but the problem is now, if you want to call it that, is that my time is split between writing my books and writing the app to build my books. And it's a nice split, right? But I feel that when I started the project of writing the books, that's all I wanted to do was just write the books. And then when I started building the app to build the books, now that's all I want to do, and I've completely neglected my book. It's kind of crazy. So this last week, even though launch day is technically tomorrow, and I should have spent this entire last week working on the app, I was like, you know, I think I'll work on the book again. So I completely didn't work on the app, and now I'm scrambling to get it out the door tomorrow. Because it's a cross-platform app. It works great on the Mac. There's not a darn thing that I would change on the Mac. It's been in beta now for several months, private beta. People like it. They're using it. They're building things with it. I heard some feedback the other day from one of the beta testers. There's in the editor portion of the app, you can preview your LaTeX math code, which I don't know if any editor is doing that right now on the market. If they are, cool, because it wasn't easy to get working, but it looks great. And he's exclusively using it for that. So I'm really excited to get Press out there so that people can make and develop the books that they want and have them work for a broad class of readers. You know, it's the whole accessibility thing. It drives me crazy that that's the last thing that people think about. Now, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to anyway because my internal filter doesn't work so good. But one of the things I'm looking forward to with Mockingbird Press is I want to get it out to the public so that more people can use it and more books can be made and people can create things that they want to create for the people authoring those things. I want the experience for the readers to be a lot better. Like, my books that come out here are so darn pretty. I'm just like, oh, this looks really nice. But more than that, the next step in this process, and I've been researching it, and I think I'll be able to do it, is I want to take a manuscript. I don't care if it's a technical manuscript or a novel, because the app will work with either format, either genre, whatever. I want, with a click of a button, to take a manuscript and turn it into a Braille-ready format for digital Braille readers. I think that would be so cool. And I'm really ambitious about that, which goes back to what I said before. It's like, do I want to write my book? Yeah, but I really want to work on the app. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I've been suffering from the same thing, too. I'm working on an app for Carol, actually, for her inventory stuff that she does, her costumes and stuff like that, right? But I keep working on it. I've got 4 apps on the go right now. 2 of them just got approved today on the App Store. But every time I like look at a way a button lays out, I'm like, oh, I should put that same button layout into all the other apps at the same time, right?
Well, okay, so it's funny you mention that, because when I had started doing this, I started with, it's been a process. I started building the app in the end of August of 2025. And
so can we talk about how you're building it? Like you saw us asking people about tools. You're talking about Python, right?
I'm talking about Python. Yeah. I built the app in Python, and I chose Python because I love Python. And to be clear, like I didn't retire and immediately decide I want to work on this book. There was a bunch of projects that came in between. And they all gravitated toward Python. When they weren't creating content and it was working on code, everything that I was doing was in Python. Because I kind of wanted to return, it's going to sound terrible, but I wanted to return to simplicity. And I find Python one of the most simplistic languages in terms of the language itself, you know, how it's formed, how it operates. It's not that it's a simple language. It's just, it's a beautiful language. And I know that might ruffle some feathers, but I really like it. I wrote 2 other apps before this one. One was something to help me maintain my Magic the Gathering collection. And then I had this grandiose idea that, I should put this online, and I should make it so that you can play games with your friends, because X-Mage is okay, but wouldn't it be cool if it was pretty? And that didn't go very far, because something else pulled in my direction. I was like, you know, I think what I want to do next is make, again in Python, a graphical choose-your-own-adventure type thing, where you could, kind of like Wordle, but would choose your own adventure feelings to it. And that went really well. I had a lot of fun with that. And then it's just like, these are the things that I was doing in my retirement. I was just making these little apps and I was having a blast. And they've all been Python, you know? And aside from just wanting to go back to simplicity and the basics, I don't really have a reason for it. I mean, yeah, sure, it's cross-platform. It's nice. But that's it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm at the age too where I should be thinking about retirement too, but, and Carol's way beyond that. And neither one of us is stopping. Like, we're just, you know, I mean, I have a 3D printer. I play with a 3D print stuff all the time for the house and for myself. And I say I make my own toys and I make my own apps for myself too, like sort of thing, right? So, and I got to say, going back to the accessibility thing, one of my biggest problem with the Mac in general is I don't think it's accessible at all. Like,
no.
I don't know. I mean, like, I years and years ago, probably about 10 years ago, I went into my email program and I set the font to like 18 points because I can't read the 10 or 12 point, you know, emails that most things come in as. And I use, you know, larger fonts on my phone and stuff like that, right? I'm always amazed at how, you know, how are we, like, why Apple's all about accessibility, and yet the unless you make your screen, you take your big screen and you make it like tiny, like you're back to like the 640 by 480 size screen with the giant icons. I mean, unless you do that, you're not really getting an accessible experience from your computer, right?
No, it's like not everybody, I shouldn't be so blanket statement like that, but so many companies and so many people, it is, and it shouldn't be, you know, it's, in fact, I was complaining to my husband the other day. I was signing up for something and they gave me that stupid CAPTCHA, which I can't read. I can barely see when there's not noise in the way. So then what do? You click on the little thing that says, here, speak the letters to me. I also can't hear very well. And all they do is they put noise on top of the words you're supposed to hear. And I'm like, I'm not signing up. I can't see it. I can't hear it. What's the point? And it frustrates me, and it frustrates me that when you talk to people who are creating the content for people to consume, if they're not having issues themselves, and it's, of course, it's not everybody. Some people are very keenly aware of accessibility and the needs that people have. But a lot of people, they don't know that there's an option for them to even do that. They haven't been told how to do that, where to go, like what metadata should I be adding, what are alt tags? When do I need them? Where do I need them? How do I choose the right font? So that was one of the things when I was building the templates for Mockingbird Press. I wanted to make sure that there were templates in there. And when I say templates, I mean you write your book in Markdown and you can choose to apply any trim size, which is the size of your book, or any template, which is what your book looks like, without touching the underlying Markdown file. So you're separating structure from story. So when I was creating these templates, I wanted to make sure that there were templates in there that were accessible, because it's not just EPUB accessibility. It's how does it look on the page when you print it too? You know, what are you using fonts that has strange characters that's going to be a problem? Are your line spacings too close? You know, stuff like that. And it's a fine line that you have to walk when you're thinking about, well, how do I make my book accessible for most people without giving up some of the design? And there are some things that are trade-offs, right? But a good majority of them, if you make it accessible for people who need it to function with it, to enjoy it, to get through it, the people who don't necessarily need it, I would say that 95% of the time, the tweaks that you make to make your stuff accessible will work for them even better than what they're used to, even if they don't need it, you know?
So when you're talking about an ebook, are you talking about like having like reader values in there? Or because, I mean, obviously when you're doing print, you have to print at a size, right? And it's fixed, right?
It's not fixed. Like, what do you... It's not fixed at all. I mean, you can...
Well, I mean, like, if you choose, like, you know, an 18-point font or whatever, and you print it out ink on paper, it's going to be 18-point from that point on. Like, how do you mean about accessibility, making it accessible for everybody? Like, can I buy a book that's, you know, with a finer point if I don't need the... Like, my 22-year-old grandson doesn't need an 18-point font, right? Like, how do you serve him?
So the most... widely recognized format that you would think when you think about print accessibility would be large print books, right? Large type books. And they make them, and some of them are really large. There's high contrast that you can get. You know, you want to make sure that the papers that you're choosing, the interior pages, there's different pages that you could get. And these are all things that increase the value of the book for everybody. You don't need to make something 25 point to make it more accessible. You can, like I was saying before, you can choose a different font that is easier to read. You have to think about, like, if you've got someone who has dyslexia, for example, and you have two letters next to each other, it might be very difficult for them to figure out what these letters are, but if you add a little extra spacing in it, if you set the line, the line width, you have to forgive me. This is that whole, my cognitive function. It's difficult sometimes for me to have conversations, but the, you know, the width between the two lines on the page.
The letting, yeah.
Another thing, and this is what I just recently learned while I was working on these templates, was that, so most of the books that we get, they're justified, right? Your left and your right same.
Right. And they have weird spacing.
They have a lot of weird spacing. So if you have any trouble staying focused on the page or the words or the sentences or whatever, just by left justifying your paragraphs and your pages, that is a tremendous help already. You're going to have your ragged right, which is fine, and for the most part, it's fine. You know, you might have some really weird one-offs, but what that does is it makes sure that every space between every character or every word is the same. It's not going to stretch it out. And it helps people who have trouble with their vision. And I was like, I didn't even think about it because I struggle reading a lot lately. And it's like once I started making sure that I'm looking at things that are left justified instead of justified. I was like, wow, that's a huge difference. Because I can read. I know you can't see me, but I'm doing like this thing with my finger moving across the line.
Well, I have a book in my hand. I'm looking at this book right now and seeing what you're saying about the fact that it's justified. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And
but I do know when you look at a justified page of text, you can sort of see patterns in the white that run through if you're not focused on the lettering, right?
Yeah, and if you've got any type of focus issues, and I'm pretty sure I have all of them, it's really difficult to read that because you start looking at other things that are not part of the story. So, in fact, if you do go to my website, I have a bunch of articles on there specifically about accessibility for print, for EPUBs, just in general. And again, I'm back to like, I was enjoying writing those articles and learning and sharing that information with people, but I don't have the time to do it all, you know? And I definitely don't have the desire to compete with what people are putting out on the internet these days.
So you mentioned those three parts to your Mockingbird thing. So you've talked about editor, you've talked about the PDFX thing. What's the third piece?
It's all those templates.
Templates. Okay.
Yeah. The templates, you could go in there and there are standard ones that it comes with and you can change them to your heart's content, but you can set fonts, you can set your spacing, you can set up things like footers and headers and where you want your information. You want on the left side, the right side, in the middle, on the top, on the bottom. What colors do you want? How do you want your headings to look and your subheadings? And you can even change. I don't know why. Sometimes I add things just because I can. So I added, you could change the background color of your page. It's like, why would you want to do that? I don't know. I have a couple books that are black pages with white text. I wanted to see what it would look like if I could do it. And I did. I figured it out and it looks good. It's been a real fun project. And I'm looking forward to getting version 2 out there so that I can work on that Braille Ready format stuff.
Yeah, like that book I was talking about that I'm going to talk about in my pick is the David Pogue book. He's got this section called sidebars, right? Which are like it's like a blue background, just like a rounded rect with blue background and then black text on it. So that you know that's not part of the main story. It's kind of like, hey, let's talk about the shape of this can or whatever, right? And it's funny when he does the audiobook, he has this little sound that plays and he goes sidebar and then it goes into the side and then he has a little sound that ends it. So, you know, okay, we're no longer looking at the blue background text, right?
Yeah. It's interesting how much you can do with audio that you can't really do in your book, your printed book.
So that's a good question. Cause I have a few friends who are authors and John Mulker, who's a good friend of both of us. He's I don't know how many books he's got, 20 or 30 books written now. When he first started doing the books, I asked him for audiobooks, right? And he only had a couple of them done. So for new authors, like what would you do if you were writing a book? How would you go about getting an audiobook? Would you sit there and read it yourself like some people do, or?
It depends. You have to have a really good setup. You have to understand that, you know, 1 hour of audio is like 3 hours of recording.
Right.
It's tough. You have to be in a quiet room. You have to have the right inflection, the right voice. There are a lot of audiobooks that where the story is good, but the narration is terrible. Some people will sit through it because the story is good. Other people will immediately not listen to your book, give you a 1-star, and move on. And you don't want that. Oh, if you look at Audible, you'll see a lot of that. You'll see a lot of people, I love this author, I love their books, but the narration was terrible. You have to, there's now with the advent of AI and AI narration, there's a lot of stuff getting flooded in that is not very good. This is not a case against AI. I have heard some really good AI readings, and I'm sure those are the ones where people got involved with it and listened to it and tweaked it where it needed and didn't just take the first thing that got sent out of it, you know. I am still a firm believer in finding a narrator who either has a desire to do it, even if they're not professional, but you don't have to be a professional to do this. You just have to sound good and have a good setup and believe in the project and yourself. So I like to give people a chance. There's you can go on all the, I think ACX has a whole list of people that you can hire. Try it yourself. I mean, if you like it, there's just know that it's a commitment. You know, again, it goes back to what I said earlier. You've got to, maybe I didn't say it, maybe I only thought it. But whenever you want to do something, you have to decide why you want to do it. That's like important, right? If you just want to pump out apps and games and terrible narration, have fun with AI. Go do it. No one's gonna really judge you, right? I'm making fun here, but no one's gonna judge you.
I don't know. I'm whenever I see an ad or hear a voice that is clearly AI, I immediately stop. So
I do too. But my feed is filled with what they call it, AI slop. I don't know. But there are people who are. All right, so you're an artist. I'm an artist. You're a little older than me. Ha. But you remember when traditional art was a thing, where you'd get out your paper, you'd get out your markers or your pens or your paintbrushes or whatever, and you would go to town and you'd have a good time. And then the digital age came, and I don't know about you, but I was getting a lot of flack from people. Look at you, you're not a real artist because you're using these digital tools.
Yeah,
and I'm like, yeah, but I was drawn with pencils probably long before you even thought about it. So I don't know what you're getting on me about, but I kind of feel like that's where we are now with this whole AI age. It's like there are tools to help you do these things. It doesn't replace the knowledge and the skill set that you have, but if you use it right and you use it, and I don't know what right is, but if you use it as a tool to help you with your job, and your job doesn't mean, you know, your 9-to-5, whatever it is, your task, that's probably a better way to say it. There's nothing wrong with that. I get a little annoyed when people produce things with it and they don't moderate it and they just take whatever comes out
and publish it.
And it's like you're not even fact checking it. You know, or they're creating problems because they don't understand it. So it's not that if you were an artist and you knew how to draw, getting a tablet is just going to make you, I don't want to say a better artist, but maybe a more efficient artist.
Well, it's a different kind of tool. So I want to go back to the developer side for a sec, because one of the things I like about development and is the magic side of it, right? You're writing the code in Python, for example, right? And I've looked at Python and I've kind of played around with it a little bit. I'm not a true Python coder. I've done a few Hello World kind of things, right? But how do you go from writing a Python app to a Mac app with menus and, you know, print buttons and stuff like that, and export buttons and menus and things? And on Windows, the same thing. Like, how do you go from Python to that? Like, what is there, like an IDE you write in, or how do you go from pure code to a finished product?
So I use PyCharm to do my Python in.
PyCharm?
Yeah. Okay. I really like that IDE.
Like an editor or IDE?
It's an IDE. Sometimes I use, I'll just use TextMate. I'll just launch it real quick and read some code. I'm like, oh, that's not what I meant to do. But there's so many different libraries out there that you could get that I am using. I try to be as, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't like to rely on a lot of different things. So anything that I rely on, it has to have been around for a while, and it has to be something that I can trust. I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. But I also don't believe in just grabbing any old wheel off the shelf. You know, it has to be something that I can see, that I can use, that I can get behind. So I am using a couple of dependencies. One of those dependencies is for GUI stuff. And you just instantiate this stuff. You throw it up where you need it to be. If you want a text view or a line edit, you just init it and put it where you want it. And it just shows up, and it works for Mac, and it works for Windows. I have a Linux version, but I don't have a Linux box that I have access to all the time in this house. So I haven't really pushed on that part of the development. But I use PySide 6 is what I've been using for the GUI portion of it. And it's a really, really nice, it's a nice library. I like it a lot. I'm using, Matplotlib to, I have to look at my dependency list now. I used to have a list of them right in front. I should probably just pull it up and look at my requirements right here. I've got a Git dependency in there, and there's
so does this get compiled into like a .app or a .exe?
It does. So it compiles down to an .exe. For Windows and with an installer, and it compiles into a DMG for the Mac. So I also use there's a small LaTeX distribution that goes with it, and there's a small Pandoc that goes with it. You can bundle it, and the way that I'm calling it is through subroutines and subprocesses, because I'm very much into following the rules. So with licensing and everything, I needed to make sure that I didn't break any of the licensing rules. I don't bundle anything that I'm not supposed to. I make the subroutine calls out to Pandoc. The Python libraries that I have, they're allowed to be used in the way that I'm using them. In fact, it's funny, when I started developing this, I used a different... it was PyQt or something. I forget what it was, but basically it's what I'm using now, but the commercial version of it. And I was like, I can't use this because one, I couldn't afford the license. So I had to go back and redo everything and use the version that I can use and that I can include in the app for the GUI stuff, which I was devastated at first. I'm like, wow, that I got to redo this whole thing. Now, I did have to redo the whole thing, but it was so close that it didn't take that long to redo. But I'm glad that I discovered it when I did. And I'll tell you, you had said something before. You were like, oh, I make this app, and then I like this button, and then I want to put this button in the other app that I'm doing, and whatever it was you said. And I almost interrupted you because I did the same thing. I've got these three apps. You know, I've got PDFX, I've got the editor, and I've got Press. PDFX is the one that converts your PDF files. Editor is the standalone editor, which has not yet been released. And Press sort of is the big thing that creates your books. And they all had their own buttons library. They all had their own text fields. Everything had their own thing. And I was like, this is stupid, because when I do something over here and I like it, I usually want to add it over to the other app. So I ended up creating a shared library with all my primitives, all my buttons, all my labels, all my text views, my scroll bars, everything. And it's worked out really well. And I'm kicking myself because if I had done that in the beginning, I probably would have saved myself like a month's worth of work.
So how are you going to distribute this app? I think you told me you're not doing the App Store kind of thing, but how are people going to be able to, you know, try it out, sign up for betas, whatever, and get a hold of this?
You could right now, right this second, you could go to the website and download the PDFX app. It's free. You go in, there's a link, you put in your email address, download the app. Get it. I'm not going to spam you. I'm not going to see your email. If you need a support question, that's the only time I'll use your email, is to reply to you. Press is going to be no different. Once I get the website or the web page set up for download, which I should be doing tonight, but I probably won't do it till tomorrow. And it's the same thing. Now that That one is not free. There's two versions. There is the personal version, and then there's the professional version. And the only difference is about $100. And one allows you to build everything, all of the PDFs, the digital PDFs, the print PDFs, and the EPUB. That one is, I think I have it up there for like $149. The other one is $49, and that lets you do everything except the PDFs. So if you're just doing EPUBs, that's the one for you. If you want the whole thing, get the professional one. It's going to stay in beta for a while, and the reason I want to keep it in beta is because if I start to add more features to it, and they're significant features, I don't want to have to increase the version number from 1 to 2. So if you buy it and I start adding features and you're still in beta, you're going to get all those features. And while it's in beta, I'm going to sell it at a discount because I think that's kind of the right thing to do. And one thing about software that has always bothered me is I don't like to spend money on software that I don't know if it's going to work for me. So it's very important for me to include a free trial, unlocked, fully unlocked. It's a 7-day free trial. This way you can test it out, see if you like it. If you do, buy it. If you don't, no harm, no foul. You know, no one's gonna call you names for not buying it. You know, not everything.
Oh, you'll call them names, but you won't go visit their houses.
Yeah,
you.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, not everything is for everybody, you know. It's back to, I built this for me because I needed it. I have decided to open it up to other people because there was interest. I had originally thought about releasing it for free, like I did with PDFX. Actually, like I do with most of the things I do. But this time I was like, you know, I'm retired. I don't have any more income. Maybe I should charge for this. I think it's worth it. I think I did my due diligence. I think the pricing is good. I think the capability is pretty damn good, if I say so myself. You know, there's a lot of things that I put in there. If one thing that a lot of other applications don't do is they don't do indexing. Indexing is huge. If you're writing any kind of nonfiction book and you don't include an index, you're really missing out. You're hurting your readers.
And Tammy and I are going to call you names.
Yeah, we are going to call you names. So this program, through Markdown, because there is some custom syntax, you can create an index. It'll automatically create your index pages for you. You can set it how you want 2 columns or 3 columns or 1 column. You want to have different fonts for your letter headings. You want to set your indentation differently. There's a C also capability. There's a C capability. So there's a lot of things I added with the indexing because I come from the nonfiction world. I need an index. Without an index, I get very lost. Who am I kidding? Yeah,
We just got a new car, and I was telling Carol we were looking at the printed manual, trying to find stuff, and I remember what you said about the indexes, and the index in this particular Japanese car company. That's all I'm going to say is was subpar. So as you may know, I don't know where I got this idea from, but in this interview format that I do these shows in, I have this section of questions that I like to ask the guests.
No, you don't. Yeah. Where'd you get that idea from?
I know, it's such a good idea, right? but I've modified it though. So it's still based on the Marcel Proust questionnaire, and I still use some of those, but I've added in the Stephen Colbert questions to sort of make it more interesting. So,
okay.
So if you're seated comfortably, we can begin with the questions.
Well, I'm seated. I don't know how comfortably.
All right. Well, the first one's easy. Is what is your motto? What's your elevator pitch?
Oh, my elevator pitch. My motto: know the why before you choose the what or the how.
Yeah, isn't that what Chuck Norris would say?
Yeah, he would. He would.
All right. So who are your heroes in real life?
Right now, my mom is my hero in real life. I know that sounds so bumper stickerish, but she's one of the strongest women I know. And without her love and her support, I wouldn't be where I am today. Aside from family heroes, Dolly Parton.
Yeah, Dolly Parton's a pretty big one, for sure. What's the best sandwich?
The best sandwich is going to be grilled cheese, hands down, with tomato soup, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Just like plain cheese, like cheddar cheese or whatever cheese slices, and what kind of bread? And
well, if you know how to make a good grilled cheese, it can be the best sandwich you've ever had. A lot of people make grilled cheese with butter. I say no to that. I say use mayonnaise on the outside. Make your grilled cheese with mayonnaise. Yeah, and you have to have three different cheeses inside, and one of those cheeses has to be American. And I cannot stand American cheese in general, but for grilled cheese, has to be American cheese.
All right. What words or phrases do you most overuse?
It used to be actually, but I hate that word now. That's probably the only one. I don't talk to. I mostly type to people now.
Well, what do you when you're typing? What do you use? Overuse?
I use dot 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 a lot.
Okay. A lot of incomplete thoughts, eh?
A lot of incomplete thoughts.
What's the scariest animal?
The scariest animal, probably an owl.
An owl.
Yeah, because those claws, man, they kill you. I love them. Owl's my favorite, but they're also pretty darn scary.
What's the first concert you attended?
The first one I remember attending?
Sure.
Let's see. Probably a Willie Nelson concert when I was about 7.
That in New Jersey?
Yeah, I think it was. I got to go on his tour bus. It was pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah, well, that's why you probably remember it, eh?
Yeah, I met his sister Bobby, the piano player. That was also very cool. I'll tell you, going back to my mom being my hero, I was so devastated that when I met Willie, because I got a chance to meet him, I didn't have a pen to have him sign my book or whatever. I had my picture of him. And I was so upset. And I was like, I don't get the picture and then the sign. And my mom signed it for me because she's an artist as well. So she signed his name for me. I wish I still kept that. I mean, I knew it was fake. She knew it was fake, but I felt good about it. And so did she.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Let's do some rapid fire. Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Window or aisle?
Window.
Flat or sparkling?
Flat or sparkling? I mean, that's we need context there.
Well, water, flat or sparkling.
Oh, see, I was thinking, you don't know what I was thinking.
Now I want to know what you were thinking, and we all want to know.
No, that's one of those times my filter's going to work. I like sparkling.
Sparkling water, okay. Cats or dogs? That's a hard one for you.
It is. I like them equally, but I have more cats, so we'll go with cats.
All right. What's your favorite smell?
My favorite smell?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never been asked that before. Chocolate. No, coffee. No, bacon. All of the above.
Bacon with chocolate and coffee?
There we go.
What's your least favorite smell?
Goats.
Goats?
Yeah. Having goats, which I used to have on my farm, the smell is terrible. You touch them and you smell like a goat for like a week. It doesn't matter how much you bathe. I can't even eat like goat cheese or drink goat milk because all I can smell is goat.
You still have chickens? Or
I still have chickens. I still have guineas.
And do you have like the show chickens still? Or
no. I do have a rooster named Gary. He's pretty.
Gary?
Gary.
Okay. All right. Who's your favorite hero of fiction?
My favorite hero of fiction. I think it's going to sound stupid, but I think Indiana Jones.
Okay, fair enough. Here's one. Who are your favorite writers?
I like Margaret Atwood a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah, and
you're from Toronto.
Yes, and it's funny. I didn't know that until recently. I just watched this. I didn't, and I like her stuff, and I was watching a 60 Minutes interview. Well, yeah, I think it was on Spotify or something. And what I really thought was cool is this woman was interviewing her, and she was showing her all the research that she had done for some of her books. And all of her books are plausible because of all the research she did. Those things happened at some point in some place to some degree. And what really struck me about that was the book that I'm working on. It's based in Greek mythology. And I felt the same way. Like, I didn't know Margaret Atwood did that. And that's something I've been doing with my book. And I started writing this book last year, sometime early last year. And I was like, that's so cool. I'm doing something Margaret Atwood did. I felt so good about myself. I was like, oh my God, I'll never make it as big as Margaret Atwood. Probably not. But yeah, that was, yeah, she's pretty good. I like her a lot. I also like, I haven't read her in a while, but Holly Black was always really fascinating to me.
What is your most treasured possession?
My most treasured possession would be my brain. Does that count?
Yeah.
Yeah, my brain.
Your brain, okay. What's the one thing you own that you should really throw out?
My brain. Yeah.
Well, we kind of asked this one already, but one of the questions is, have you ever asked anyone for their autograph, but other than Willie Nelson?
Yeah, I used to go to the Walking Dead cons a lot, and the Star Trek.
I can't imagine you going to the
Walking Dead conventions, the Star Trek conventions. So I asked a lot of people for signatures. See, this is my brain again. This is why I should throw it out. Autographs.
So how many autographs do you have, or did you keep them all?
I didn't keep any of them.
You didn't keep any of them?
No, I think I have a mouse pad around here with all the Star Trek cast signed it.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. I'm not a very, this is terrible. I shouldn't admit this, but I'm not a very sentimental person.
Well, this is movie related. So, and it's, the question has evolved over time. So it started out pretty simply with two choices, but now there's four. Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
I've never seen Babylon 5. Do I have to give them in order or just pick one?
No, well, one or two or say all three, whatever.
Well, I like them all, but if I had to just pick one, I'll tell you the order. I'd go, you said Star Trek?
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek, Star Wars, and then Doctor Who.
But it's all the new Doctor Who stuff, right?
No, I haven't watched the new. I stopped watching when was it?
No, I meant like new since Christopher Eccleston.
No, all of it up until I can't remember who was last that I watched and in what order.
Oh, Chuti Gatwa.
Was it Peter Capaldi who was the last one, or was it Matt Smith?
No, Peter Capaldi, and then it was Jodie Whittaker.
I never saw the Jodie Whittaker one.
Those are good. And then the last one was Chuti Gatwa.
Yes, I didn't see him either.
He's on, and Disney's calling it like Doctor Who, like 1.0, like as if it's brand new. And they've canceled it. So
they canceled it?
Yeah, they're not making it anymore. Well, I mean, they probably will make some in the future.
That's what happens when Disney gets their grubby little hands on things.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the most used app on your phone?
The most used app on my phone is going to be, I have to look at it. It's probably my, my Genie app, my SimpliSafe app. Those I use a lot. And my Messages app and Discord. Wow, that's a lot of apps. You only asked for one.
Well, I asked for the most used one.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's my most used ones. I don't check my mail often enough, so I probably should use it.
Right. What number am I thinking of?
Five.
Nope.
Three.
No, you only get one guess.
Damn it.
Yeah, and you wasted it on the first guess. Do you have a dream that you can remember?
A dream, I wish I could do this, or like I went to sleep and had a dream.
Yeah, a dream you can remember.
Okay. I used to have a reoccurring dream when I was a child. I used to dream, it's going to sound really wacky, that I would have a sword fight with a spider, and not like a giant people size or giant more than people size spider, an actual spider size that like I could just step on them size, but I would have a sword fight with him and he would always win, and he'd stab my foot and it would hurt. And I swear I have a scar from that, but I think it was when I fell off my bike.
Right. Okay. Okay, you get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. You don't have to listen to it all, like, continually. But when you go to listen to music, this is the song you listen to.
Probably Beth Hart has a rendition of Change Is Gonna Come. I think that's a good song. I think that's the title of it.
Well, we'll do one more question, and then we'll wrap up. So, what is your earliest memory?
My earliest memory.
Then I'll tell you some trivia about that.
I'll tell you, it would probably have to be working on the computer, like as a child, like five years old. Mm-hmm. I'm a nerd. I've been a nerd for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Well, the interesting fact is that, and a lot of people don't really understand this, but apparently, and this is according to Dr. Hannah Fry on one of the podcasts I listened to with her, and I'm not sure if she said it or it was a neuroscientist that said it, but the way babies are raised, they are programmed not to remember anything until they're about 3 years old.
Really?
So most people's earliest memories start around 3 or 4 years old. Yeah, because something about the way the brain develops or whatever doesn't have long-term memory it learns, obviously, to talk and walk and eat food and stuff like that, right? But, you know, get attention. But, yeah, that doesn't actually form memories until about 3.
That sounds about right.
Don't ask me to find the source of that, folks.
No, I believe you. I think my brain is working backwards now. I think I'm starting to forget more than I know.
Well, yeah, we all get to that point, I think.
It's frustrating.
We all get to that point. All right, so if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that? What's the best way?
Well,
besides, you have this crazy cat channel on Discord.
I do. I mean, Discord probably is the best way to get to me. I'm Paradox927 on Discord. I'm Paradox927 on, I don't really go on Twitter anymore. And I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me there, Paradox927 or Tammy Coron. I come up. I've started posting a little bit more over there, but I don't really get on social media anymore. I don't know what happened. Like past couple of years, it's just like there's nothing there for me. I go on Facebook to keep in touch with friends and family, and I have my Discord. That's mostly where I'm at, is Discord.
Yes, I know, because I'm on your Discord.
I know.
There's lots of traffic over there.
Hey, anyone is welcome to come onto my Discord. They just gotta send me a message on Discord, Paradox927, and if you want to come in, we have a really lovely channel where it's not very loud and obnoxious. There's developers and authors and a bunch of stuff.
All right. Well, as I say every week, my name is Timitra, TimMitra. I'm on Blueski. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on, you know, Instagram, Threads. Yeah, but I'm not on that other one that we don't mention when you cross your fingers. I don't know I guess until next time, we'll see you in the future.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for having me.
Say bye, Tammy.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at morethanjustcode.com. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Now we're in the after show.
And we're in the, oh, the after show.
I heard some senator was talking. Some senator was interviewing, I guess, the guy who's in charge of Blue Sky, and he called it Blueski.
Blueski.
So from now on, I'm calling it Blueski because it looks like it's spelled like Blueski, right?
I have an account over
the
there.
Good old social network, right?
I don't really use it.
You don't go to Blueski?
Not really. I just don't like social media anymore. I find that.
Well, you never did like people anyway.
I like people when there's meaning behind it. Social media seems like there's not a whole lot. I mean, it was always bad. But it's just really bad lately. And now with the whole, half of the stuff on there is just garbage, AI garbage. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't belong in this timeline anymore. I need a different timeline.
Yeah, that's the one thing about, the current timeline we're on is that it's just gotten polluted. It's ever since, you know, people discovered that they can scam people out of money. That's kind of where this is all going, right?
Yeah, but hasn't that been a thing since the beginning of time?
Because we used to have like bulletin boards and stuff like that, and people just came on and they were decent, right?
I don't know. I had to ban a lot of people on my bulletin board back in the day. But you know what, though? The community was more tight-knit. It was better. Like, if there was a bad actor on there, they wouldn't last very long because the community would rally behind each other, and that person would either leave on their own or we'd ban them. I do miss the BBS days, though. Things are simpler. Simpler time. Now everything's so confusing. I don't know if it's my age or the world.
A bit of both.
Yeah, there's this new thing that people are doing, like they're posting stuff, and I don't mean to pick on AI. Like, AI has its place. There's good things about it. There's bad things about it. But what drives me crazy is if you read one post on LinkedIn, you've read them all. It's just like, not everyone, but some of it is just so absurd. There's this one individual that I am friends with on Facebook. I honestly don't know how this individual and I are friends on Facebook. I don't know where the connection came from because I don't think I personally know them. And I'm pretty good about keeping my Facebook locked down. So it must have been a friend of a friend and the thumbs up came through. But this individual posts things on Facebook quite often. Long walls of text that I know were written by AI, and it's
Is that what those? I kind of wonder about those because it seems to me like every second post on Facebook these days is war and peace. I like to call it, right?
Yeah,
and I get so tired.
Yeah, and it's all the same. It's like I don't know, and I worry that people are not being who they are supposed to be because they're being told what they are. And how to behave and what to say and what to do. And I think that was always a problem. Everyone's always trying to keep up with the Joneses. But I think it's even worse now. Because people are afraid they're going to get left behind. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong to think that. They are going to get left behind.
Yeah, I keep seeing all these posts on the TikTok and things like that about how to beat the algorithm. And this is what the algorithm's doing today. And then you see cookie cutter posts by everybody doing the same thing, all trying to game the system, right? So
yeah, I don't know.
You're talking to a couple of game developers here. We know how to game the system, right?
Yeah.
You know, and this ain't it.
I really do miss simpler times when people were more genuine about the things that they wanted, the things that they do. You know, and that's, I know it. I'm not the one who's coined the phrase of you have to understand why you're doing something. But I do believe that's, It's a lost art, you know. But then again, you know, sometimes maybe the person's reason for doing something is because they want to be on top of the algorithms. They want a huge following. They want tons of money. None of that has ever interested me.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the question is, like, if everybody's doing it, then how are they all getting this money, this apparent money? I mean, but you're right. It's the sort of It's the extent of the high school click thing where you've got, you measure yourself by how many followers you have. But, like, how could you possibly have that many followers and have a relationship with all of them, right? You can only have a relationship with so many people, right?
That's true.
I mean, a real relationship, right?
I think that's true. I think that in the last 10 years, I've seen more relationships just evaporate because I don't know where people went, you know, and that place that you don't like to talk about, you know, a lot of conversations were happening there with people that I admire, people that I knew personally, people I didn't know personally, people that I trust, people who trusted me. And I've tried to find them and keep in touch, but I feel like I'm in a different timeline. I feel like I don't belong. Like something happened, something shifted, and I'm sort of just stuck here and looking around thinking, well, shit, how did we get here? I know how we got here. I just don't like it here.
Well, so like I said, you got your Discord place that you hang out, right? So
I do. I do like Discord.
Yep. Well,
Was that a boring episode for you? I just talk.
That's good.
It's hard to me.
Less work for me.
It's hard to think about words sometimes. Line height, line height.
You had a good word salad going there.
Oh, I did. Man, it was line height I was thinking the whole time. I don't know, maybe I even said it 12 times.
Well, I said letting, which is the old school way of doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right? Letting, kerning, all that. I don't know. I always have had trouble saying what I'm thinking. That's why I like writing, because I can think about what I'm going to say or write. I can write it, and then I can look at it for 6 hours, fiddling with every stupid freaking word and over-edit the hell out of it, but at least I can edit it. When I'm having a conversation with somebody, I've always had problems with trying to put together what's in my head and formulate the words and the sentences and the paragraphs and the thread. And it's getting increasingly difficult for me to do that. When I'm in by myself and I'm either writing code or writing a story or writing an explanation for nonfiction or whatever, I can sit with that and figure it out and untangle that mess in my brain. It's taking longer to do it, but at least I'm doing it. But conversations, they're getting way more difficult for me. It's, you know, why? Because it's a lot. I'm not doing it every day. Just I'm not, and I need to. And I think that's what I worry about a lot for the kids growing up in today's environment. You know, we had places to go and things to do, and we would have that communication and that connection. Kids don't really have all that today. You know,
it's a different world for sure. Like we used to be able to we had to go outside because there was nothing to do in the house, right?
Yeah, so. As long as you were home by dark, you were fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, get up. The sun is out. Get out of here. It doesn't happen. Now it's the sun is out. Quick, go hide in your room.
Well, yeah, because people suck, right? And you can't, like, everybody's gotten so insular and whatever, right?
Yeah, that is true. But I do find that you get what you put out there. But today's world is a little isolating. So hanging out on Discord is helpful. I do play WoW with my mom almost every night.